So, welcome to today's presentation about OpenSUSE and Agama. It's basically a follow-up of yesterday's presentation where Ankur present Agama, the live demo. And yeah, this is planned to be more interactive. So if you have any question anytime during presentation, feel free to indicate it to Ankur, who's sitting here with microphone. We'll bring you the microphone, and yeah, you can provide feedback, ask questions, whatever you want. Sorry. Some notes. Agama is still under development, so now it's a great time to affect what it can do and how it behaves. So, and it also works the other way, that something that currently Agama can do is maybe it won't do in the final version. So it's up to you to affect how it will look like. So what's the plan for this presentation is basically giving a quick overview. If you want to see it in action or want to see something behind, there is Ankur's presentation from yesterday about demo, and from 1 year ago on OpenSUSE conference, there's more about reasoning behind it and some decisions, some architecture and stuff like this. So about the overview, it's intended for SLI 16, so it's our next installer. The main goal is do only the mandatory stuff or the stuff that's really hard to do after the initial boot. Basically, what's easier to be done on the system should be done on the system instead of installer. There's many reasons of it. Yeah, probably the main one is that you have your target system when you are familiar with it. Installer is just one of possible systems, and you prefer to do it in your favorite environment. Yeah, it's web-based. I will mention it also further, some advantages that it has. And yeah, goal is also to be flexible enough to basically take all the possible features we get in past and try to incorporate it in new installer, that it will be prepared for it from the beginning and not doing it by some workarounds. It has multiple interfaces. Probably the most visible one will be the web interface, but it has also the command line, and it has HTTP service. Basically, those command line and web uses this HTTP service, so it's fully controlled remotely by HTTP service. And yeah, it has some advantages, like you can program it or you can connect it to some other applications like SUSE Manager. So this is how it looks like. If you want to see more, I suggest Ankur's presentation. And just a reminder, this is how looks the Qt interface in current Tumbleweed installer. That's from Yast. You can say that, yeah, this Qt doesn't look so bad. And it's true, it looks quite good on desktops. But main difference why the web-based is better is that if you have any display device, then basically for Qt, it means if someone in Qt start to porting Qt to that device. But with web-based technology, it's like any display device, if it cannot display web page, it's like that device. Yeah, so basically hardware vendors early tries to have browser there that can display web pages. So it's no longer our jobs or Qt maintainers' jobs to try to port it. And instead, it's, yeah, we basically get it for free. And it's not just about browsers, it's also about all infrastructure around, like accessibility devices and various stuff. Yeah, basically, everything now lives on the web. So yeah, everything is adapted to work with web interface. Yeah, and of course, we have the old anchors. Yeah, it's up to you how you like it, how do you see it. I will also mention it in one of the future slides because, yeah, it looks like nice retro, but yeah, it can scare some users if they see it as the first time when they boot the Medium. Yeah, and of course, today is the official release of Agama 9. Our blog post is published. So what you see on that screenshot is currently living in Agama 9. So feel free to download it. We have some announcement on our blog. So give it a try yourself and you will see. Yeah, and of course, on barbecue, you can take one beer for Agama. So now I will slightly talk about OpenSUSE and installer in general. Why OpenSUSE needs or should have installer? Because of course there are distributions that don't have installer at all, and it still lives, and you can use it. So first reason is some kind of public relationships. If a new release happens, like for a new Leap, for new Ubuntu, for whatever, in technical articles, what you see in screenshots is basically, usually it's three times installer and once the desktop with new background. Yeah, because, of course, if you look at it from the other side, what others should the journalists show? Everyone has Firefox, everyone has Steam running, everyone has LibreOffice, so it's same for each distro. But what's unique on that new release is usually some theming, so that background, and installer, because currently each distribution has its own installer. So it's the installer is good for that public releases. Of course, it's also good when you promote the OpenSUSE to others. If there is some good installer that can help them to install it, giving good first impression, that you send them, hey, try OpenSUSE, and if they see some nice UI that it's cool, because previously they maybe tried to install Windows or macOS, and it also looks good. If you promote OpenSUSE and then they. For example, it's case for VSL. Like, you are a Windows user, just give it a try in OpenSUSE. Now OpenSUSE has VSL images, it's good. So they give it a try, and in VSL, due to technical reasons, we have the anchors is first boot. Yeah, and it quite scares them. Even if you check it in OpenQA, we have that Windows 12 that looks quite good, and then you have that anchors this window that looks very retro, but I worry that it can scare some people. Another reason for installer is it can help users, because for me Linux is always about choices. With macOS or with macOS, basically you have golden cage where you have everything set in stone, everything works together, but you don't have much choices. And for Windows, it's also quite similar. There are more choices, but sometimes it's not so easy to do the change, because it's intended to do one way, and other ways is more tricky. So installer in this way basically is guide to help to show those choices, to make some reasonable defaults, but allows user easily to change these defaults to something that fits their needs. Installer also should help with respecting differences of users. Some users have fast internet, some have small internet, small bandwidth, so they don't need to install big stuff, like they can at work download whole big ISO and just install it at home when they have issue with amount of data. Also about accessibility, if you have good installer, it can help people that for example have problems with colors, with eyes and other stuff. And of course with different hardware, installer can help you. For example, Tumbleweed still doing 32-bit x86, so it helps with people that have old hardware and just wants to have something running on it. That's something that you cannot really do with for example Windows. they basically just cut it off, and you need to throw away old hardware. And yeah, for Windows, old hardware is quite new. I would say that, yeah, we support much more older hardware, so it's also a bit eco-friendly to allow users to use their old hardware. Yeah, for newcomers, installer is important because installer should have minimal mandatory choices, because each choice, when you are new to something and don't know much about it, then every choice creates a bit of stress because you don't know what to select. And of course, what helps is also smart proposals. So even if you select only do really minimal choices, the rest should just work. Whatever hardware you have, whatever you use, it smart proposals should help you to have it from the start. And of course, newcomers don't like some surprises, like if they try OpenSUSE and they have Windows pre-installed on machine and wants to use it, they don't want to install just silently kill their Windows. That's not so nice. So currently, the installer supports the resizing of Windows and allows you to have multi-boot and stuff like this. So for newcomers, installer is quite helpful. And yeah, here is probably my first note about current installer. It's a decision that's made that for desktop environment, we don't have default. So user need to select, but try to be something that comes to from Windows when there is no desktop environment. And now you give a try OpenSUSE, and now you need to select if you want KDE, GNOME, I think LXDE, the XFCE4. And you don't know what to select. So this is already in current installer the choice that confuses some customers. So maybe it will be helpful to again introduce the default for desktop environment. I don't want to even say any word about what it should be. I don't want to start a flame. But yeah, I think it would be helpful to have just some default for the newcomers when they don't know what they want, just give them some reasonable default for a desktop environment. So, let's start a flame. Who think that KDE should be the default desktop environment? Just 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, okay. So, who thinks that GNOME should be the default for the tumbleweed? Yeah, 3, 4, 8, 9. Yeah, it's very close. And XFCE4. Yeah, it's 4. So yeah, it looks like if it wants to have default, it will be big battle between KDE and GNOME. But yeah, I think it can help the newcomers to basically have some good DE. I think both of them are good DE, but. Yeah, it's for them hard to decide, especially if you Google what's better, then yeah, you get long mailing thread or a long discussion if KDE or GNOME, and that newcomers don't know what to select. Yeah, and then there is experienced users and why they want installer. Yeah, basically they know already what they want, and so they want to do some changes that fits their needs. They want to do it in an efficient way, but also they are quite focused. They are focused on some parts, they are experienced in some parts, but for other parts, they also expect some reasonable proposals that they don't need to care about. They, for example, want to play a bit with partitioning, they want some RAID, some LVMs, but they don't care what encryption is used for root password. Basically, they trust or installer selects the reasonable one. So that's why I think that OpenSUSE and an installer still make sense to have something to show for users. Yeah, and now let's start with a bit more questions, because now it's about specifically Agama. What Agama can do is install multiple distributions. You already see it in Ankar's presentation, or even in Luboš talk about Leap16, where he created the Agama ISO that can install Leap16 together with Tumbleweed, with MicroOS. So for the same code, this is quite easy. But for a different code stream, it starts to be harder because software stack. Basically, just imagine now that if we want now have one ISO that can install everything we currently provide, so it means Tumbleweed and Leap 15.6, if it's possible. Currently, what happens is that on installer medium, you have some RPM and it do installation into root. And of course, that RPM versions between Tumbleweed and Leap very differs. Yeah, and I think it differs in a way that if you use RPM from Tumbleweed, then after reboot, the RPM on Leap probably won't work due to differences in RPM database and stuff like this. And maybe even some other parts won't work. So we think about how to solve it, and if you really want different code streams installable from one installer, then possible option would be to have that software stack in container. So basically, if you select Tumbleweed for installation, it will load container built on top of Tumbleweed that contains RPM, libzip, and yeah, some small dbus service that will be provided to system service, to system bus. And same for Leap. For Leap, it will use the RPM from Leap and also libzip from Leap, and yeah, just provided to dbus. So my question is, if you think it's reasonable to have multiple streams from one ISO, if you see some usage, like maybe it can be like something like promote ISO that on OpenSUSE conference or on OpenSUSE booths, we can give people the USB, and that USB can contain installer that include all of those, like Tumbleweed, Leap, and then it's up to user what they want to install. But if the effort makes sense. So my question is, who will use such ISO that can install Tumbleweed, Leap, and Micro? Yeah, so 8 people. And so similar to GNOME. So just smaller half. Yeah, and other question is, when we solve that software stack, then when you think about differences between other distributions like Fedora, Ubuntu, and others, then also the main difference is their software stack. Yeah, Ubuntu uses Debian Fedora or Red Hat distributions in general. They don't use patterns like we use it, but they use groups for Anaconda. So if we can have that container, then yeah, I think it will be possible to install for Agama or other distributions. So question is if we should somehow work on it and kind of promote it. Like if you want to create your new distribution that's based on whatever you want, if you want installer, you can use Agama. So that's questionable. If we want still have our SUSE or OpenSUSE installer having just SUSE OpenSUSE specific, or try to provide it also to wider audience and other distributions. So my question is, who would like to install other distribution that's not from SUSE, from Agama? Yeah, I see Neil. Yeah, more. Four people. Five. Yeah, it can be, for example, helpful also for SUSE manager and Yomi in Uni. My pronunciation is bad. It can be helpful also for them because they allow to manage the other distributions, and if they have one unified installer that can install any distribution they support, it will be much easier to really allow easy deployment of new machines with whatever distribution than they want. Good, so there's more than zero positive votes on it. Yeah, another topic to discuss is probably what to install. Currently, Agama using the common stack from Yast, which means installing RPMs. It's, I would say, well working, because it's working for years. It has many features. But new basic new ways how to install or even new software stacks, yeah, like Flatpaks or container arrays. So question is if Agama should start doing it. At first, I will stop for that images because that's, I would say, how Micro 6 is the main deployment way is installing images. In general, it should not be hard to adapt Agama to install images, but the tricky part is not deployment of image, but basically the limitation of users. Because if there is image, that image contain file system. And yeah, feel free to correct me if there is people that knows more about images than me, that image contain file system. So if user decide in partition that they want a separate partition for something that already contain data in image, then it will be overwritten by that separate partition because you deploy image to partition. So we are if we start doing it, we probably need to like mount image and then start copying content, not just deploying quickly image. If exactly for the reason of separate partitions, and other problems is that image basically needs to be prepared for everything. It's like even current Agama, that ISO is kind of image. It's image that can boot, that we kind of fine-tune it, like we remove our audio cards. But on target system, you probably don't need all firmware that takes space. So with RPMs, we have our RPM provides, and basically that RPM provides ensure that your hardware get the firmware that can run it, or kernel modules that can run it, and target system contain only what's needed. But if you deploy image, you don't have this optimization. You basically need to deploy all possible stuff to be able to boot. And another issue we have with images is additional software, because depending what you select in installer, it can install some additional software, like if you select separate XFS partition, then it's nice that installer automatically installs all that XFS utils. And it also works for other parts. If you want TPM2, then it installs software for TPM2. But if you don't use it, the software is not there. So basically, it's like if you prepare the image for target system, then installer tries to do it the same with by themselves, by depending on your choice, to create the minimal system that works for you, but contain everything you can find useful. And that's something we don't have for images. For images, what do currently the Fedora with Fedora Workstation is that Anaconda, they have live image. They have some overlay, I think overlay FS, basically overlaid file system. And the first layer is read-only system of that live medium. And when they do installation, they don't allow any software changes, and they just take the first layer and copy it to target system. And what Anaconda currently cannot do is more adaptation. Basically, they can deploy image, or they can install RPMs, or do some other things, but just one of it. So our idea is that for images, we can do that we can install image and install additional software by RPMs on top of it. But question is if it will be needed. Yeah? Sorry? Yeah. Anchor will come.
There have been people interested in OpenSUSE for a while to be able to build installable live environments, which Yast used to support 10 years ago and dropped it, and it would be nice to have that ability again with the Agama stack. And also that makes it easier to use with non-SUSE distributions because the scope of things you actually have to manipulate to install becomes much smaller.
Yeah, that's true. That's also why I mentioned that currently our install is basically a specific image that's tuned to be able to run installer, but doesn't contain other stuff. Like, that Fedora Live image contains much more, like try your system and then install it. But it needs to contain everything that should be on target system. So our image is smaller. Currently, Agama, that doesn't contain repositories, is like 660 megabytes of ISO. And yeah, I will talk about it later, because yeah, that's something that can be also maybe improved.
So, just another suggestion here. So what I like to do is actually creating my own images that are prepared for the target system. Sometimes even with an application that starts right after installation. And that's something that I do within OBS, with Kiwi, of course. And I wonder if something like that would also be possible. Just keep in mind, if you have something like an image that actually does nothing but prepare system automation stuff like Salt or whatever you use, that's actually how far you have to go until you really continue with some different environment to prepare your actual system. So this is not so much about a desktop system, but about a server system, and sometimes even with just prepared hardware, like you're in a virtualization system, or you're on mainframe, or whatever. So actually really prepared for the target system to a point that, well, you have to get that image on there, and that's your actual problem, and that's where you could step in here.
Yeah, That's as I said, it's possible with image installation, but it also has some troubles, especially with the preparing system partitioning. You need to be ensure that it's there.
Actually, that will be my question. So you mentioned that you want to build something, let's say, using Kiwi. So wouldn't the Kiwi self-installer, an image generated with Kiwi that already has some kind of self-installer, which is basically DD, will be enough? And if not, what are you missing? Which part of Agama would you like to use? Which features of Agama would you like to use for deploying that particular image that you created that are really not part of the Kiwi self-installer, which is basically a better DD kind of?
So the thing is that you have to get that Kiwi image somehow there. So you have to have a possibility, and maybe even one that's standardized, that actually gets you to the point that you are partitioned, that you have some specific whatever password setting or whatever you think you can think about, and then you just pull that image and copy it onto the block device. That's basically it. And then you might also want to have something like you have your system disk and your data disk, and therefore you actually don't really care if the system is overwritten completely.
Yeah, interesting use case. I think it should be doable. We just need to know about that, the requirement. As time flies, so let's step a bit.
Actually, there is another question over there.
Yeah, another person. Good. Yeah.
I don't mind if we run out of time because people is asking questions. That was actually the goal anyway. So.
I was more thinking loud when Anchor was demoing things yesterday. Maybe on the product page you can have a, for example, drop-down menu to add server or desktop, and that adds different pattern depending on which one you use.
The server desktop, we basically plan to have it in more like in software selection screen, but it's kind of system role. Our current approach is basically it's like server-based. Like you can select your desktop, or you can select some basic server technologies in that additional software selection. So it's currently there, but having something like deploy this image and then do something else, or deploy on given partition, given image, it can be interesting option. But back and slightly move forward. About Flatpaks and containers, we briefly discussed it, and yeah, I think answer here is it's usually better to do it from target system, because yeah, unless you have good use case for needing Flatpak or container right immediately after boot, then there is no big need to install it. Of course, if you start using something like bootc that can boot directly into container, it can be slightly different topic, but in current state, I don't see much use of additionally configuring Flatpaks and containers that you have from the start of installer or after the first boot. Okay, so the next part is auto-installation. It's maybe not so interesting for desktop users, but for server part where you have multiple servers that you need to deploy, if it's uniform enough, easy enough, probably image deployments when you have some fine-tuned image is good. But yeah, if you have various servers, then probably you need a bit of tweaking and having some kind of logic or using some proposals for the parts that's not uniform between servers. So what Agama provides is basically partial AutoCAD support, because yeah, customers, and maybe not just customers, but also OpenSUSE users, if they use auto-installation, they invest already some effort, some money, some time to having their AutoCAD profile that just works. So we try to keep it as much as possible. So for the parts that's already configurable by Agama, we plan to support it if the AutoCAD profile contains those parts supported in Agama. Of course, for the parts that's not part of it, yeah, we probably cannot support it because we don't have ability to configure it. And now there's a question.
Do you plan any kind of migration tool from the previous AutoCAD format to what now is in JSON?
Yeah, that's exactly what we do at the backend. We basically have a Ruby tool that takes the AutoCAD profile, do some processing, and the output is JSON file that's loaded into Agama. So that's exactly what we have. Currently, it's part of Agama. It's not available separately. But yeah, if there's interest, there's no big deal to do it. Of course, there's dependency on AutoCAD because it needs all AutoCAD processing to really sure that it supports all the various schemas that AutoCAD have and the various stuff. So to be sure that we process it correctly, we use the YAST code for processing that AutoCAD profiles. And when we get data, we translate it into JSON for Agama. So there is tool for it. Okay, the other part is new stuff in Agama. It's basically JSON. You already see it in Anchor's presentation. It's the same JSON they use for editing configuration. That you can easily obtain from the manual run. And yeah, that's I would say, also a common use case that if you have multiple servers, you want to try it on the first one manually, configure it as you want, if you are not sure what exactly you want to configure, and then take the JSON from it and yeah, just automatically deploy the other servers. And other is JSON.NET. It's basically DSL language for JSON, for producing JSON. And yeah, it quite surprised me. I would, another question, who knows JSON.NET here? Yeah, it's also quite small amount. It quite surprised me because yeah, JSON is quite used in Kubernetes, so I kind of expect it's yeah, cool new technology that everyone knows. But yeah, I get a similar feedback on 2 weeks ago on the conference, when some people even think that when I show example, they think that's our own DSL language. So no, it's not invented by us. It's really existing DSL for JSON. And when it's useful, basically we inject their output from LSHV, so hardware information. And for example, if you do that manual deployment of your first machine and do the static IP configuration, you assign the static IP. But for other servers, you don't want to use the same JSON, otherwise you end up with 200 servers with identical IP. And that's, yeah, that doesn't work. So Then you can use JSONNet, and for example, based on MAC address or whatever criteria you have, you can generate that static IP for a given installation.
Sorry to interrupt. One more note that just came to my mind, since you were talking about AutoJS compatibility and also about JSONNet, which is basically about having dynamic profiles that are adaptable to each machine. You may know that in AutoJS we also had mechanisms for that, like rules and classes or scripts. You could execute a script and modify the profile itself, and the profile was reloaded again. We had embedded Ruby, so you can have Ruby inside your AutoJS profile to do whatever. And I just wanted to mention that about that partial AutoJS support, that it includes all that. So you have AutoJS profiles, including dynamic embedded Ruby, rules and classes, whatever, it will still work with Agama, because that migration tool, that, or it's not a migration tool, it's a backward compatibility tool that Joseph was mentioning, or contains all those features to have dynamic profiles. So you can just run Agama, we'll download your profile, we'll do the calculations, we'll adapt the profiles, we'll recalculate the new AutoJS profile, and when the result will be turned into a JSON profile that then will be fed into Agama. So yeah, all that is covered in terms of backward compatibility. And of course, if you don't want, you can then migrate that to JSONNet. That should be better than all the, well, not sure if better, but at least shared with other projects like Kubernetes. But you don't have to rewrite everything in JSONNet on day one if you don't want.
Okay, and the other one that's probably the most flexible is shell script. Shell script just use the command line interface of Agama. So you upload shell script for automatic installation, and it will do all steps. Like, yeah, it can load some JSON file, it can do some editing, it can obtain some information. And what we even plan to do, that's probably the most flexible thing, is before the system is unmounted, you can do some stuff on target system. The example I am having in README is, for example, in SUSE we have a requirement to have Velociraptor installed on each server, and yeah, it would be nice to have it immediately at the first boot, so it starts reporting immediately when you start. So basically you can do installation, and then in the automatic installation and in the shell script, before it reboots, you basically install additionally Velociraptor, do some deployment of configuration, enable systemd service, and then do the reboot. And you have everything at the first boot. And yeah. Original plan that I have is, instead of writing the shell script, I plan to use combustion. But for combustion, I have a bit trouble with its requirement to have basically partition with label. That's called ignition, and that's loaded from there. So if combustion starts supporting stuff like just deploy the shell script somewhere and do it during first boot, then of course it will be possible also to easily use combustion. But currently for me, combustion and installer is kind of tricky because it needs additional partition. So yeah, maybe hint for combustion developers that it would be nice to have be able to just do the first boot configuration without need for additional partition. Yeah, and what it allows is pre-configure, which basically means what you can do currently with shell script is that you will load JSON but don't start installation. So you will see the whole proposal, as you can see in demo, but with modified configuration. It's I know that some people use it in AutoJS. It's called confirm mode. Basically, they load the profile, but they want, before they click on install, to just verify that everything is done as they expected, just to check it. So it's also currently possible with Agama. Just load the JSON and don't start installation. Yeah, and maybe you notice in demo we don't have the security section, so for us it's still a question what to have here. We definitely want security profiles, which is what Ankur mentioned yesterday. It's some FIPS, some certificates that basically if you select it, you said that target machine should confirm to this certificate, so it should be ready from the start to apply to this certificate. So that's one thing. Another thing is, you see in previous presentation about SE Linux. And on OpenSUSE, there is still option to select AppArmor. So it's questionable if for installer, there should be the selection of AppArmor and SE Linux in install itself, or if should be done after the first boot. And one of the features that I ask quite often, because currently it's not visible in UI, is allow SSH access. Basically, it's in current installer in that you click that you want to be able to access to machine by SSH. So if there is firewall, it opens for a port in firewall, it starts SSH daemon. And basically ensure that you can access to the machine via SSH from network. So that's a question if it also belongs to this security section. And time flies, so I will go to the next one. It's memory requirements. We are still not sure if it's issue, if people have enough memory or not. So my question is, who has at least 2 GB of memory on their machines? It looks like majority, but not all of them. So it's quite surprising. So who has at least 1 GB of memory? Even less people. So for us, the question is how to solve it. Where we are basically limited is especially for network boot, where you need to load all installer image into memory, is firmware selection. Because you need to be able to boot anywhere, and firmware itself already eats a lot of space. So if you load the image into memory, then it already occupies a lot of memory. So having 1 GB is really, really challenging, especially when you start downloading repository metadata from Tumbleweed. Tumbleweed has huge repositories, and it kills memory. So currently, we can run in 2 GB. And I'm not sure if we can get below. Our idea is different ISO for low memory machines, like basically don't have their browser, don't start the browser automatically, so you get the just text interface. So my question is, if you have so low memory machine, if you prefer to have dedicated ISO that can work with lower memory requirements, who will use it? 1, 2, 3, 4 people. So let's see if it's worth effort. If you have any other idea how to decrease memory consumption, we will welcome it. But as said, currently the main issue is firmware limitation that increase the size of image. Then there is air gap scenario. As I mentioned, there are people that don't have fast internet, or even there are devices that's not intentionally connected to network, so they probably need something like full ISO, which is currently available for Tumbleweed. But even that full ISO has some issues, like it's just preselected set of packages, so it doesn't provide everything that Tumbleweed provides. We already face it when we try to use it for Agama, that, for example, there is not FDE2 tools, so you cannot have use FDE if you have just Tumbleweed full ISO. What currently Agama do is that it first try to search for a partition with given label, and partition means also another ISO or on a USB stick. Basically, with label that's already done with Tumbleweed ISO or Lib ISO, and search for repositories there. So it means if you have a virtual machine and just connect one ISO with Agama and second ISO with Tumbleweed, then it will find the Tumbleweed repository and use it. So basically, it can already work with airgap scenario. But question is if we should use some kind of like repository ISO, or if it would be better to have something like all-in-one ISO that basically we can also do that one ISO contain whole repositories that can be installed. So full Tumbleweed, full micro OS, full that stuff. So question, if it's better to have multiple ISOs that can be, for example, burned to multiple partitions on USB, or having one ISO that, yeah, you just deploy, but it can be huge. I expect something like, yeah, maybe we don't even fit to 18 gigabytes, which is, yeah, double-sided DVD. That's this question. Yeah, and another question, if this air gap scenario should be supported only for Leap, because for Tumbleweed, it doesn't make much sense for me. Even for a slow roll, it doesn't make much sense to have a rolling distribution and no network access. That's like, yeah, contradicting for me. Yeah, Neil? Anchor? Neil? Yeah, yeah.
The mirrors suck where I live, so I use the DVD to be able to install Tumbleweed without, you know, it stalling out in the middle. So realistically, as long as the mirror situation is kind of bad for where I live, I kind of rely on the DVDs to be able to install properly.
Yeah, Lubos?
A little correction. We have actually offline repository image for Leap Microsync since 6.0. Because we don't have install image, we have the air gap image, if we can call it like that.
Yeah.
Ask Simon, by the way. He's from Australia. He has to deal with that. Ask him what he prefers. I guess many people will be in similar situation. Is Simon Lees here?
So I use a weird set of packages. And so for my use case, our traditional net installers have been best, because you only install or download the RPMs you actually need.
Yeah. So yeah, that's probably something we need to discuss with Lubos, what kind of delivery he would like to provide to users. We're just thinking what we should support in Agama. So yeah. Currently, Agama is flexible enough to support all of those scenarios. So yeah, it's just about to select or discuss how to exactly do it. Yeah, and my last slide is about next milestone, because as you heard, we released Agama 9. So we already have plans for Agama 10, improving storage, adding support for Dust, ZFCP, and improving UI. As Anchor shows, not all UI is fully adapted to be flexible and good-looking on phones, so improving this. Improving Autoast support, because we still know that some parts of Autoast is not well-supported, and it can be. It's in our power. It's more about some additional script support and stuff like this, so we plan to improve it. And last thing is fit into section of adaptable installer, which is like that, yeah, security profiles basically allows to fit distribution needs. Yeah, maybe there more will appear, but currently it's more like, adapt. For example, for that security profiles, you need to limit some options. You need to provide some additional options, some additional packages to install. So we need to find a way how to make installer flexible enough to really fit into those various requirements. So that's the plan for the next milestone. Yeah, and I would like to thank you for your attention. And you can, there's still some questions. Good.
I believe yesterday Anchor teased that you would be talking about extensibility. Is there anything you can already share about that? So with Yas, there were the modules, Cockpit has the bridges. Is there something similar you're planning?
Actually, we are in a very early stage. We have some proof of concept, but nothing we have really decided that, like an API to create that. And one of the reasons is because we are not sure what are the needs. So we are more than welcome if you have anything in mind that you would like, any way in which you foresee that you will need to customize the installer, either the UI, either adding new capabilities, or because you believe, okay, this part of Agama, I'm very interested in this part, but I don't need the rest. Please reach out to us, because we want to know what are the needs before we design any solution that maybe will not. So that's for us a very important topic. Before proposing something, knowing basically if you want to extend the installer, if you miss something but you know it's very specific for your use case and it's not doesn't need to be upstream or whatever, or if there are some part of Agama that you find especially useful and you want to use it in your own infrastructure, we are all ears.
Yeah, so we are basically collecting requirements now, so yeah, idle time to say it. And Luboš has probably the last question, because yeah, lunch is already there, so yeah,
somebody
don't be too hungry.
Have a question. I was actually surprised to see AutoYast, because I know that Agama came with, like, you were talking basically to DBus in the past, so we will use AutoYast in Agama?
No. It's not used underground. To explain it, basically, we support AutoYast profiles, but not, it doesn't use the AutoYast itself, only the tool that do the conversion use the AutoYast beneath, because it reads the data using all that AutoYast features and then transform it into JSON. And JSON is then used as common Agama JSON file. So it's converter, but not that AutoYast runs the profile.
Because AutoYast is quite complex. Even the URLs, when you pass the URL where to take the profile, we have our own custom URLs with features that are only in the AutoYast profile, in the AutoYast URLs. So you have HTTP, HTTPS, all that. But you can also have. We went pretty creative during the years. So, and the AutoYast URLs are not something that Curl or any other tool could process. So we really need about fetching files and about processing XML. Our XML is also quite special. So. Processing the XML and fetching data from the network and all that, still use the very same core because we want to ensure backward compatibility because our customers rely on that. But then the real installation will be AutoJS free.
Yeah, and I see Neil, so yeah, really the latest.
That's what we wanted. People are asking questions, so that's
yeah.
So you're talking about AutoYast compatibility here and converting it internally to be able to run subsets of it for your thing. How difficult would it be to do the same thing with supporting kickstarts? Because kickstarts are basically defined with, they have a schema, they have a basic definition format, and there's a Python module that turns it into something like a dictionary, which you could then export as JSON and do whatever you want with it. How difficult would it be for you guys to also add a way to handle that? Like, this kind of ties into the support other distros type thing. And, you know, I am morbidly curious about using Agama to install, like, Fedora type systems as well. So, yeah. Or even what Luboš says about migrating RHEL or whatever.
Yeah, basically, I already looking at Kickstart even for translating to AutoYast, and yeah, some parts should be relatively easy to get from Kickstart, and some parts will be hard because it's like a different kind of definition. For example, for that storage in Kickstart, you create the exact partition on with given names, with given sizes, which is it's not like guided proposal, but it's like specific ones, and it's also somehow ordered. So we need to it basically goes from the for, like if you write it on command line, but AutoYast is more like how it should look like, and then apply it. So there are some differences, and of course if you want to contribute it, you probably know the Kickstarter better than me. So if you want to contribute it, you can read what currently JSON can do and create a tool that do the conversion. Something similar to our AutoYast tool. Probably you cannot support all features, but giving some initial conversion should not be hard. Like create some rough JSON and mention like I don't understand those parts or I cannot translate those parts, so please adapt to your needs to the final JSON. Do it yourself or. So good idea, and we welcome any pull requests. So thanks, and I don't want to delay you more for your lunch. So thanks.